Are you struggling to lose weight and keep it off? Tired of wasting time and money on starvation diets that lead to more frustration and stress? If there was a weight loss solution that could actually work for you, would you try it? Then head to golo.com.
I'm Steve. I lost 138 pounds in 9 months on Golo.
I'm Amber. I've lost 128 pounds with Golo.
If you're ready to take back control of your life, head to golo.com now and see how Golo can work for you. That's golo.com.
My sleep is way better. My inflammation has gone way down. Golo saved my life. I was way overweight. That's what sent me down the path. I wanted to make sure and live for my kid.
I have literally tried everything. I was on the verge of getting gastric bypass surgery, and I saw the Golo commercial, and it was the last thing I tried because it worked.
Join over 2 million people who found a better way to lose weight with Golo. Your healthier and happier life begins at golo.com. That's golo.com. Again, golo.com.
Coming at you from Southern Command in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and appreciate you being with us today. So it's countdown to chaos, or it's countdown to what else? Countdown to certification. As we start the Dana Show on this Friday edition, hour one, we got the Congress convening at noon Eastern, and one of the first orders of business would be, well, let's talk about House Speaker. And you got Mike Johnson. And you already had one defection in the very thin ranks of majority for the Republicans. It was, we mentioned him yesterday, Thomas Massie, with a real cute cut. It was cut five, Steve-O. Thomas Massie, he says, hell no, I'm not voting for Mike Johnson. In fact, he's willing to put his hand out. You take the scissors. So cut five, Steve-O.
Oh, no. You can pull all my fingernails out. You can shove bamboo up in them. You can start cutting off my fingers. I am not voting for Mike Johnson tomorrow.
Oh,
and you
goodness.
Can take that to the bank.
Jeez. Man. So that leaves just one more Republican. So Mike Johnson could only lose two votes going into the vote that should be taking place right now, maybe before the end of the show, if all the Republican ducks are in order. Well, maybe Mike Johnson will stay as Speaker. So let's take the temperature. Let's check the room real quick. Cut four, Steve, was Representative Carlos Jimenez. And he says, outside of Thomas Massie sticking his hands out, saying cut his fingers off and cut his fingernails off, there's really nobody else. It seems like everybody is there. So cut four, Steve.
Outside of Massie, I think nobody else is a hard no. And so They have issues that they need to work out with the Speaker. Look, this is bigger than all of us. We have an agenda that we need to move forward, very aggressive agenda that the Trump administration wants us to pursue. None of that can happen until we have a Speaker.
Yeah, and none of it, including the certification of Donald Trump's victory in the U.S. House, taking in all the votes coming in nationwide, the Electoral College, all the work that was done, the certification on which date, kids? January 6th. Next Monday, January 6th. What does Jim Jordan have to say? Let's see. Cut three, Steve.
I think so. I mean, obviously, Thomas Massie's indicated he's not going to support Mike, but Mike's a good man, a man of character, a man of integrity. What I said this when I seconded his nomination in front of the conference, I said, you know, hard work doesn't guarantee success, but it sure improves your chances.
Okay, now Mike Johnson has the support of President Trump, the full support of President Trump. Let's just avoid all the chaos, kids. Now, the question now, as we got a three-hour program here at DeVille, will it happen on vote number one? And will vote number one, the first vote, will business be taken care of? Now, Mike Johnson, he's got a couple of whips out there counting the vote, getting, you know, the comments from all the Republicans. And I'm sure that all Republicans, they can give Thomas Massie the luxury of, you know, sitting on the fence saying, no, I'm not going to vote for Mike Johnson. Hell no. Pull my finger. Oh, no. Cut my finger. Pull my fingernails. Mike Johnson, cut one. He says, first vote, it's going to be a done deal. Cut one, Steve.
I think it's going to be okay, Larry. We'll have maybe one no vote, I think. I think we get it done on the first round. I'm certainly hopeful for that because, as we noted, we've got to stick together.
Well, there's a chance that if it happens, we might be able to tell you here on the Dana Show before it's over today. Let's see. Update on New Orleans. Update on Las Vegas as well. Comments from the sheriff in Vegas. Let's start there on the Cybertruck that has proven and has been certified as the poorest vehicle you can choose to conduct a terrorist attack, a terrorist bombing. And I don't know if the bomber knew that. Okay, so let me get some comments from the Las Vegas sheriff. Let's see. It was cut number 8 on describing and repositioning how you describe what happened at the Trump Hotel. Go ahead, Steve.
The question is, am I comfortable calling it a suicide mission? I'm comfortable calling it a suicide with the bombing that occurred immediately thereafter. I'm not giving it any other labels.
Okay, and cut 9 real quick from the sheriff.
Now, I would like to acknowledge a couple of things because I know what's going on in the social media world, and there are a number of things in this case that are similar to the attack in New Orleans. We do know that our subject here served in the military. In fact, he's a current member of the military. Both of the subjects served at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. What we do know about that is it's a very large military base, and we have no record that they served in the same unit.
Okay, and maybe didn't even know each other. It's just so bizarre. It is just, and then when you dig deeper into this suicide bomber, and I'll, you know, yesterday I withheld the names of these two. Now, I'm sure you're joining me in this as you follow all the information online and as the audio comes out. Not much new has come out between yesterday, today, the past 24 hours when it comes to these two. All I know is when it comes to this guy, this suicide bomber, or the suicide that eventually became a bombing because he had some trigger, maybe fuse to blow up whatever he had there in the trunk of the Cybertruck. This guy who, Matthew Livensberger, he had some personal problems. And more of that came out over the past 24 hours. This guy had a new baby. What was it, like a 10-month-old, 8-month-old baby? His new wife, if she was a wife, or maybe just the baby mom, I'm not sure, but she said that he was cheating on her. It had some personal problems, some emotional problems. And his uncle, another report in the news that I picked up, his uncle said that he supported Trump, was a big fan of Trump. So he found that surprising that this guy, Matthew Livensberger in Vegas, would try to make some sort of statement with a Tesla truck, Elon Musk, there in front of the Trump Hotel. It's just so bizarre. It just raises a lot of questions. And no reports whatsoever of any Islamic radicalization for Matthew Livensberger, right? You think that'd be more prominent, that would be dominant in the news. In comparison to what took place in New Orleans, well, that Islamic ISIS sympathizer, he pledged his allegiance to ISIS. Wasn't necessarily trained by ISIS. In fact, it was one of the reports here. His brother, his family, his brother specific, I got one report here. The brother of the New Orleans ISIS terrorist, because I call him that because he pledged allegiance to ISIS, posted for a long time, they say, the investigators say, he posted for the longest time that he wanted to kill people. He put some disturbing stuff online. But the brother of the New Orleans ISIS terrorist, he said that he was surprised. He didn't think that his brother would go and do something like this. He did become distant, isolated from his family in recent years. And somewhere over the past 6 months, this guy got really radicalized. I spoke with a friend of mine who does law enforcement. His opinion of it is, he's saying this is probably mental disease, like a mental disorder mixed with some radicalization. That's probably what happened with this guy. You guys recall the reports a couple days back of explosives, of people putting IEDs around the French Quarter near Bourbon Street? Well, it seems that those reports of other people that were involved, the reason they said that they were hunting other people is because this guy, this terrorist, this Islamic terrorist, and he's the one, I don't want to say his name, I don't want to give him any credit, he's the one who put the little igloos, the little coolers with the pipe bombs with the explosives around the French Quarter. And people, well, they say, hey, look at that, it's an igloo. Let me open it up, see what's in there. Oh, it's Ain't that bizarre, though, that if there were people that opened up and saw a pipe bomb, or maybe he covered it. I'm thinking he covered it with something else, because if I open up an igloo and see what's in there, and I see wires and pipes and it looks like explosives, I'm calling 911, wouldn't you? I'm thinking maybe this guy covered it up, because the other individuals who were taken into custody for questioning because they found these explosives, these pipe bombs, these igloos that had been stuffed with pipe bombs, they just simply looked at it or stopped and picked it up or stopped and opened up the igloos to see what was going on. Why didn't they call 911? If they saw some pipe bombs in there. Anyway, he acted alone, this guy, this 42-year-old guy from Houston, radicalized. He pledged his allegiance to ISIS. FBI saying, yeah, he acted alone. And, of course, took his ram. He rammed his truck, killed 14 innocent people. Let's see some audio on this related to all this. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Apparently, the NOLA terrorist, the Islamic terrorist from New Orleans. Yeah, he's a monster. He ruined so many lives, hurt so many families. But he's a monster with a message, if you think about it, right? Let me play cut 12. Cut 12 from the FBI, Steve.
There were 5 videos posted on Jabbar's Facebook account, which are time-stamped beginning at 1:29 a.m. and the last at 3:02 a.m. In the first video, Jabbar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the, quote, war between the believers and the disbelievers.
My goodness. Yeah. So he's a monster, and he wants to kill and kill a lot of people for his jihad, for his cause. He's a monster with a message. So let's not distract from the main objective here. To what? Convert people to Islam? Is that what it is? How sick must you be? Well, to that point, right? How sick in the head was this guy to think, oh, what do you think is going to happen? Well, people are going to love you more? They're going to fear your Allah, shaking their boots? It's, oh, yeah, okay, stop killing me. I'll go ahead and do your Allah thing. My goodness. It's coming up on 18 minutes after the hour. This is the Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez, broadcasting today from our Dana Show faithful affiliate, 710 KURV in South Texas.
And our partners for the program, new to the show, they're Preborn. It's a great organization that works with women as they determine how to handle an unexpected, unplanned pregnancy. And Preborn gives women the opportunity to meet their babies, to have an ultrasound, to hear their heartbeat. And when that happens, a child's chance at life doubles. And it's a pretty amazing thing. And when you consider that abortions are actually increasing, especially with the abortion pill, it's more usually with the abortion pill than even going into these clinics. And so that's what makes Preborn's work all the more important. And they have matching grants. So when you donate, because all of this is possible because you donate and you can start, I mean, you can save a life at just $28. They have a matching grant. So your donation goes twice as far in saving lives. And in addition to the ultrasound, you're also helping Preborn partner with these women to make sure that their babies get the best start all the way up until 2 years of life. So it's pretty amazing what they do. Your donations are what power it. And it's very simple. Dial #250, say the keyword baby, and that's how you do it. #250, keyword baby. You can also visit preborn.com/Dana and donate online. Every contribution counts. preborn.com/Dana, #250, say the keyword baby.
Make some common sense of the crazy headlines with the Dana Show podcast, your on-the-go guide for getting up to speed on today's most important stories. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or your favorite podcast platform.
This is the Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and for my friend Dana Lash, appreciate you being with us today, reporting to you from Southern Command here in the RGV of Texas. So I caught up with Carrie Sheffield, and she's with the Independent Women's Forum. She had a write-up. It was in the Daily Signal and other forums probably today. Donald Trump, because I found the commentary just appropriate, because Donald Trump has an opportunity. He and his people had an opportunity to shake up the press pool. You know this tradition that they have? They put the big fat dinosaur networks that are not as fat when it comes to income now as before. And viewership, that's because less eyeballs, less subscriptions, less money for all the old papers that are not papers anymore. They're online publications, WAPO, ABC, NBC, all these dinosaurs, Why do they get to sit in the front? It's the White House Correspondents Association that does that. Well, the White House, Donald Trump and company, they've got a chance to shake things up. We got a lot of new media up there. We got that One America Network. We got the gang from Newsmax. We have Daily Wire. You name it. Many more independent, liberty-minded, and conservative media. I think they should have a shot to sit close up to front and put in their questions that are substantive. So anyway, I had a conversation with Carrie Sheffield about this from Independent Women's Forum, and I'll share that with you later this hour of the program. Steve, I didn't start the clock, so he just warned me when it hit around two and a half minutes. That way we can... Okay, so let's do some headlines, Steve. Go ahead.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I say... let capitalism be capitalism. Look, check this out. President Biden blocking the proposed purchase of U.S. steel. Now, I recall an interview on this issue of how big the steel production industry is in our country. Of course, it's not what it used to be a century ago. But U.S. steel is only one of many players. It's only a small group compared to the many players and producers that we have in our country and the sources of steel. So President Joe Biden, and this is something that Donald Trump likely would have done as well. This is not to poo-poo Joe Biden, but also Donald Trump, you know, he's a more pro-union guy, you know, very populist in the America First mindset. Yeah, probably would side with Joe Biden on this one. I'm just saying because I get the impression that that's where Donald Trump would be. President Joe Biden blocked the proposed purchase of U.S. steel. It was a $15 billion deal. Of course, they can do the sign of the cross, say it's national security issues. I don't know, man. They need the cash at U.S. Steel. And I'm sure the unions got in the way. I suspect that they did got in the way of this. Hey, we need to protect the country. No. Look, in the event of a nasty showdown, a war, just go Venezuela style. Nationalize everything. Doesn't matter where it comes from. Oh, Japanese own this? Doesn't matter. It's like in Venezuela. Oh, U.S. companies own these car makers? Oh, it doesn't matter. We're going to nationalize. See? In the event of emergency, you know, with the power of the state, centralized state, they nationalize everything. Anyway, so Joe Biden flushed that Nippon Steel deal down the toilet. The U.S. Surgeon General warning about a link between alcohol and cancer wants a label on it. Dr. Vivek Murthy saying, put a label on alcohol. The more alcohol you consume, the greater the chance of cancer, he said. And as far as the better diets, according to the U.S. News World Report, the top diets, if you want to lose some weight, live healthy, the Mediterranean diet, followed by the DASH diet. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You're listening to The Dana Show from South Texas.
Our partners at Caltech, the P15. Standard capacity, 15 rounds. I highly recommend the P15, especially if you're looking for a concealed carry striker fire pistol. This is from the inventors of the micro compact pistol category. Striker fire reliability. It is the P15. Stands for 15 pews. Well, I mean, maybe not the pew part, but 15 rounds. It comes with two standard capacity magazines. One's a 15 round minimal pinky extension. The other's a flush fit double stack mag that holds 12 rounds. It's 1.27 inches approximately wide. 4-inch barrel, lifetime warranty. Tritium and fiber optic front sight. Fully adjustable fiber optic 2-dot rear as well. And the metal version comes with these gorgeous walnut panels. The polymer version, gator grip texture, lightest, thinnest, double stack 9mm on the market, hands down. Lighter and thinner than my 43X. Packs a punch without dragging you down, without compromising stopping power or concealability. It's a great, great offer from Kel-Tec, and you need to check it out. P15 in time for Christmas. Innovation, performance, and Kel-Tec. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. KELTECweapons.com. It's the P15. Tell them Dana sent you.
On the go and need a quick news fix with a fun twist? Follow Dana's Absurd Truth Podcast for bite-sized, informative episodes perfect for your busy schedule on Apple or wherever you get your podcast.
You all have seen me disagree with Mike Johnson at times, but you want to know something else? Here's what I recognize. For the past 4 years, all of you, and myself included, have put blood, sweat, and tears into electing President Trump. Here's what I'm asking my colleagues to do. Let's put aside our pride, let's put aside our egos, and let's put aside the infighting. It's time to come together as Republicans. I'll be voting for Mike Johnson. We're going to elect a speaker, and then we're going to swear in as members of Congress. And then on Monday, we're going to certify the most historic election in our nation's history.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Marjorie Taylor Greene, that's her voice. And I hope that Chip, hooray, Chip Roy and the rest of the gang, a couple of from Texas, I hope everybody just gets in line. It's time to take care of business. There's no reason to be, in my opinion, there's no reason to be embarrassing Donald Trump, embarrassing yourselves, going into the weekend. There's no reason for chaos. There's no reason for Matt Gaetz-style chaos. There's no reason for drama in the House. Just get her done, first vote, in and out, let's go. Because that's the big job by Congress. Right now, they're in session, the vote's not taking place right now for Speaker. It's not, and I'm kind of hoping it's done before the end of the show. That way we can report, okay, it's a done deal. January 6th, Monday, boom, there you go. They're going to be able to certify the vote. Yeah, Donald Trump won the election. Because that's the first order of business on Monday. If Mike Johnson is not Speaker, that ain't happening on Monday. Can you imagine the chaos that ensues from that? So that was Marjorie Taylor Greene. Yesterday I mentioned her as maybe a possible ally of Thomas Massie. Tom Massie is the only one who says he's not going to vote for Mike Johnson as Speaker. I'm Sergio Sanchez. This is The Dana Show, coming at you from The Dana Show Southern Command here in South Texas. Coming up later in the program, I was wondering how long is going to be before you and I start seeing some savings at the pump. I had a chance to speak with a friend of mine, an oil economist, about this. I'll share that conversation next hour of The Dana Show. And just coming up here in just a couple of minutes, I want a shakeup of the press pool in D.C. I want the people's choices. And of late, the people's choices have been with online media. You know, all these different surveys, and you hear them in the news cycles, and I'm sure you're scrolling on your X feed or maybe other, any other face. I hate Facebook. It's a necessary evil because it's so darn big. I don't have a TikTok account. The Chi-Com's own TikTok. They're not going to own my data, my purchasing habits, my credit card number, my location. Absolutely not. I hate TikTok. It's China, owned by the Chinese communists. I'm in the camp that says, be done with it. Flush it down the toilet. Make it, unless they give it to American service. It's bad enough that you're surrendering your information to a bunch of strangers. You definitely don't want to be surrendering that information, especially if you work for the government, for the state, for the federal government, for any agency. You're on a military base. You don't want to be surrendering that information. But people don't think that way. They just like stupid little videos and monetize all that. So that's why I don't have a TikTok account. Facebook just stinks. It sucks. I hate Facebook. But it's a necessary evil because it's so darn big. The other day, these ninnies, the Facebook thought police, they have no sense of humor. I'm thinking it's just a bunch of bots that are monitoring. There was somebody posted, and I reposted, a fire at a warehouse, at a Temu. You know what Temu is, right? Temu is that, what was the name of it before that? There was this Chinese retailer called Wish. A bunch of cheap stuff from China. Well, the new one is Temu. A bunch of familiar stuff that you know, and it was a warehouse, Temu warehouse on fire. So a tragedy in China. The Temu warehouse burns up. Total losses in this $100,000 square foot facility, $52.16. So how cheap everything is from Temu. I reposted that. I got red flagged by the Facebook Karens. Oh, this is not true. You know, I think we're going to limit your participation. That's why Facebook sucks. And so everybody gets their information from online media. Why? Because they don't trust American media. Okay, so let me share that conversation with you I had. Carrie Sheffield, she's with Independent Women's Forum. There was a write-up in Daily Signal from Carrie Sheffield, Senior Policy Analyst with Independent Women's Voice. This new Trump administration has a chance to shake up the White House press pool. I found that fascinating. Let's do it. Carrie, where do we start on this? It's the correspondent press group, that organization up in D.C. that makes decision on where to sit people from WAPO and ABC and CBS and all that, right? Those are the people that are calling the shots. They don't have right to do that, do they? I mean, this is federal property. This is a White House press briefing. I mean, can you explain how all that works up in D.C.?
Yeah, so it's an interesting legal question, and it's something that the Trump administration was very interested in. And they took a respectful approach and a hopeful approach. And the media, of course, the liberal media at the White House Correspondents Association responded very poorly and did everything they could to attack Trump. And the last year of the first Trump administration, I was a journalist in the White House press briefing room, and I was only invited because I was a guest of Kayleigh McEnany, the press secretary. I was not a member of the White House Correspondents Association, and I was granted access. I was a reporter for justthenews.com, which is John Solomon's outlet, and Chanel Rione from One American News, we were allowed in as a guest of the press secretary. And just through this dynamic, Chanel had applied to join the White House Correspondents Association and was rejected. And so basically, the history of the White House Correspondents Association, which is every year they have the big dinner, and that dinner is now used to attack Trump at all costs. This group is a outside nonprofit, and just by courtesy for decades, the White House press office has granted basically control of who's allowed in the press room and who gets to sit where, who is granted basically access to the leader of the free world. And what was so striking to me, my first press conference when I was in there with President Trump, I wasn't allowed a seat. I had to stand in the aisle in the back with Chanel, and she had to do the same thing. And it was striking because both of us asked Trump questions that were substantive. Chanel asked a question about Iranian foreign policy. I asked a question about Hong Kong. I had just done one of the last interviews with Jimmy Lai, the Hong Kong billionaire, before he was imprisoned. And I asked Trump about the protesters in Hong Kong and about Jimmy Lai. And then I believe she was with NBC News, and she was seated in a plum location in a seat on the front row, I believe. And she asked a question about QAnon. I thought, how ironic is this?
Okay.
That the quote-unquote legitimate establishment legacy media, NBC or whoever it was on the front row who has the seat and all of the trappings in the good old boys club, or in her case, good old girls club, whatever, the stuffy establishment, elitist, out of touch, not understanding the voice of the people, she's asking about an internet conspiracy theory.
My goodness.
And the reason she's doing it is because she wants to drag the president down, and she wants to make him look bad. And I'm here, and One American News is here asking substantive questions because we want answers for our people, and we want you to move forward. And what's interesting is that the people in the room, as it currently stands, we see it over and over. It is not proportionate to the voice of the people. And so I find it rich that the Washington Post, for example, their motto is democracy dies in darkness. Well, the root word of democracy is demos, and demos means people. And if half of the people are not represented in the press room, then you are failing. You are dying. You are making democracy die in darkness, Washington Post, because you are twisting and you are not representing the voice of the people. And they've come after, the Washington Post has come after my group and Independent Women's Forum and Independent Women's Voice, which we take as a badge of honor. But it's unfortunate because this causes severe mistrust and distrust and a decline in our social fabric and social capital because of the way the media is so destructive and so out of touch.
Carrie Sheffield, Senior Policy Analyst, Independent Women's Voice.
The Trump press team has an opportunity here. We've seen some signals that they want to. And Sean Spicer, God bless him, he started that process. He allowed for the first time Skype questions and remote questions into the press room from outlets that were not here, that weren't in the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was getting people in who were, you know, bloggers and non-traditional, but getting people in the room who are non-traditional and having more open access to conservative voices to be proportionate. If we're roughly in a 50-50 country, but it's not that way in the press room.
Yeah.
And so now there's some balance.
And there is more balance now overall in the market and the eyeballs and the ears have been moving toward a more independent-minded and conservative-minded and liberty-minded press. We have more outlets now and more sources. And thank God for Elon Musk and X that they've been able to grow exponentially there and express themselves without being, you know, off-boarded and denied revenue sources. Newsmax is growing. One American Network, as you mentioned. Who comes to mind? Daily Wire, Blaze. I got your article, your write-up, your opinion piece on Daily Signal. They're all over the place. And I would argue that if you add up those numbers like you're saying, man, you got more than half of the American public that are going online. See, the number one source for news is online, is a platform of people going on X and going online to seek news information because they don't trust the low-rated leftist liars, the propaganda peddlers at MSNBC, the Clueless News Network, and ABC News shooting themselves in the foot, finally proving their leftist, Marxist bias going after Trump, the attacks on him. They completely crapped on any legitimacy that they have. It's the market is speaking, and people are moving towards the new, independent, liberty-minded, and conservative-minded press. Those people should be at the front of the line, front row in that press room. That's how do we make that happen?
Well, that's what's going to be interesting because there were two journalists in the Trump years who sued the White House because the Trump White House had revoked their press access. And the Trump courts lost in court. That was Jim Acosta from CNN, and then a reporter with Playboy. But the thing is, in the piece that you mentioned, the Daily Signal piece, and I looked at this, I interviewed Hans von Spaskowski, who is a legal expert. He said he believes the cases would have been won on appeal, but he recommended that when it comes to revoking passes or he said the problem was more about the initial access or the initial credentials that were given and then being very clear on the standards of how they would be revoked. And so that's really where the legal battle is going to be. But ultimately, at the end of the day, as you mentioned at the top of our conversation, the White House press briefing room is a government property.
Yep.
And it's no sense that an outside private nonprofit would be dictating who is allowed in that room. And I am all for freedom of the press. I mean, I'm a journalist by training. That was my journalism degree. I've worked in journalism in one way or another for almost 20 years. And I support freedom of the press. But at the same time, not allowing someone onto government property is not the same thing as stopping or shutting down, mm-hmm. Or in the case of big tech, completely stifling, through algorithms and bias and things like that. But again, those are private companies. So all of this is up for debate in the courts, but I think that we will see the Trump administration do more. There, Chanel Rion from One American News, who I mentioned, she has spearheaded and created a separate nonprofit to be a competitor to the White House Correspondents Association. So there had been some talk that the White House would recognize both credentialing bodies.
Okay.
And said that way there would be more competition. So we'll see what happens. But I think there's a lot of exciting momentum. And
I really do hope things get shaken up. Look, there are influencers who have more eyeballs. There's local TV stations and big markets that have more eyeballs than MSNBC at any given hour, or CNN for that matter, that they've just lost their audience, maybe based on ratings, or maybe even some influencers that have big following. Those people need to have staff sitting there. Lord knows they're getting paid for all the attention that they get online. But this is a time to shake things up, and I do hope it happens under this administration. And whatever you can do to make it happen, we wish you luck, Carrie, and appreciate your time today. And keep in touch. Appreciate you joining us today on The Dana Show.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Senior policy analyst, independent woman's voice, Carrie Sheffield. I'm Sergio Sanchez in for our friend Dana Lash from her Southern Command office here in South Texas at KURV Radio. So they're going through the motions in the U.S. House, and yeah, it's more than just one person being nominated for Speaker of the House. So Mike Johnson, he received his nomination. They're doing their speeches on that. And now Hakeem the Nightmare, not Hakeem the Dream, Hakeem the Nightmare Jeffries. Yeah, he's been nominated as well. So let the chips fall where they may. And we're probably going to see the end of the first vote here before the end of the program. After, if let's say the speeches aren't that long, because they all have to be timed as well. So stay tuned, see what happens as far as Mike Johnson maybe keeping the gavel, and let's get her done. Let's go ahead and vote and approve the election on Monday, on January 6th. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You're listening to The Dana Show from South Texas.
Our partners over at Black Rifle Coffee, it is the best coffee that's out there. Everything else is swill. In fact, it's communist swill that they spit in a cup and then they ran it through a coffee maker. That's what you're getting if you're not getting Black Rifle Coffee. So first off, veteran-owned, veteran-run, and they hire retired and active duty, and they've got so many different roasts. One of their big ones right now is their Freedom Roast. It's what the founders would have drank with their beer, let's be honest, over at King Street. They would have drank this. Every sip is a celebration of liberty and a tribute to those who fought for our nation. You can save 20% with code Dana right now. The Freedom Roast, so smooth and full of flavor. It's over at blackriflecoffee.com. While you're there, check it out, the Freedom Roast, because it's available in ground, whole bean, and 12-count rounds. You can also subscribe to Black Rifle's Coffee Club. You get free shipping and automated orders right to your doorstep. That's so nice. And then you always have the convenience of having your favorite coffee on hand. And they're dedicated over at Black Rifle Coffee to their mission of supporting veterans and first responder causes. They also do that with their business. So check out everything that they have to offer. The Coffee Club, the whole bean K-Cups, ready to drink, apparel kettles, grinders, and so much more. Save 20% using code Dana and get your freedom on with the Freedom Roast from blackriflecoffee.com. And whatever you decide, whatever roast you get, 20% off using code Dana, only at blackriflecoffee.com.
Get the lowdown on the latest news with a side of laughs whenever you want. Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
Well, they're taking the vote up in D.C. Here we go. Round number one. Let's see if here in hour one of the Dana Show, let's see if Mike Johnson survives and is still the speaker. We should be able to tell you next hour, sometime next hour, how the vote went down. You're listening to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez in for my friend Dana Lash. Hey, Apple TV Plus is free for this weekend. I know some of y'all are picking up the show on delay a little later today on Friday for the weekend. You carry it on the weekend. So Apple TV Plus, if you've been curious, see what they have on there. I know I have. We don't spend hardly any money on TV. I know some of y'all have like 10 subscriptions, all these different apps and channels. Where do you find the time to take in everything that you want to watch, man? It's like even like on Vizio, free television, they have all these different shows and classic shows and movies we haven't seen. We're barely catching up with all that stuff. So I've got the Amazon thing, Amazon Prime. I get free shipping on purchases, right? That's good. And I think the boy, my little one, he likes the Disney stuff. But Apple TV Plus, Apple TV is free today, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And, yeah, they're throwing the net out there, see if they can capture you, see if you sign up for their subscription. Thank you much for joining us on The Dana Show, coming at you from South Texas. I'm Sergio Sanchez. Join us online as well.
Well, that brings another issue. I think the incoming administration needs to look at insider threat. I mean, insider threat analysis has been put in the back seat by this administration. If we got two people who served in the military that were in, you know, that committed these terrorist acts, we need to really dig down into insider threat in our military, in our federal service, whether it's the FBI, whether it's, you know, other agencies, whether it's the military. Insider threat's a big issue, especially in our industry that has infrastructure responsibilities. We need to drill down and find out about this inspiration and what insider threat is currently in the United States government military and in the United States government service, and address them right away. We got to address insider threat. We have to. We can't let this go on any further.
That's our incoming border czar. That's Tom Homan. And yeah, look, the Washington government, it's like an Airbnb after somebody rented it for New Year's and just destroyed the place. There is so much house cleaning. There's so much that needs to be cleaned up by the Trump administration. They can't start doing it until the 20th of the month when they finally take hold of everything. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and you're listening to The Dana Show, reporting to you from South Texas, The Dana Show Southern Command. Always an honor to be with you. Yeah, Tom Homan on some of the work that needs to be done because of the DEI mindset, the the hiring that emphasized non-qualified individuals based on color, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or gender confusion, whatever it was. There's so much that needs to be done to restore the American military to its might and to be just one phone call away to take care of business. In the ranks, we have individuals that should not be in the military, should not be leading the military. Now, some of these people that have been radicalized within the ranks of the U.S. military, that's something for like internal policing, like internal monitoring that needs to take place in the military. The way things are right now, and because of these, well, one known, truly known ISIS terrorist attack by the terrorist in New Orleans. The other one, we don't know yet. I mean, it's an explosion that took place after a suicide. This guy popped one in his head, shot himself in the head, the guy in Vegas, and then ignited the explosives inside that Cybertruck. Islamofascism, Islamic extremists, I don't know, man. I don't know. And this guy had personal problems. He was, according to the reports, maybe he was unfaithful to his wife, had a new baby, went back to an old girlfriend. I mean, this guy, obviously not stable. You're in a condition like that where you take your life. You're not stable. You're mentally ill. There's something wrong with you. Well, at least we know there's one incident inspired by ISIS, inspired by Islamic radicals. And we need to go back in and police the ranks in the military, because this, unfortunately, provides ammunition to some of the internal American enemies. People, for example, this fool over at MSNBC, Larry O'Donnell, he was running the numbers saying, yeah, we've suffered more from our military than from individuals coming in illegally from the southern border. It's cut 15, Steve-O.
The New Orleans terrorist, like Timothy McVeigh, reached the rank of sergeant in the United States Army. The simple fact is this country has suffered more deadly terrorism at the hands of American-born citizens who are veterans of the United States military than people who have crossed into this country at the southern border.
Oh, my goodness. Before you start going, oh, God, yeah, he's right. Absolutely, he's right. My friend, only the feeble-minded would follow an idiot like this in this conclusion. If you run the numbers on just under the Biden administration, run all the crimes, all the shootings, all the rapes from the Nungery family, the child in Houston, to this college student in Georgia, to the in Northern California, San Francisco area. All these people have been killed by illegal immigrants through the years, especially by this Biden administration that just opened up the border. All the dead in the wilderness and the desert, all the dead in the wilderness in South Texas that die from exposure to the heat, to the elements. All the dead people as a result of lax border policies. More people have died as a result of lax border policies, especially under the Biden administration, than any harm that has come to this country by some kook, some crazy veteran, or maybe even active veteran, active service member in this country. It's important to put everything in perspective. And with the Trump administration coming in, perhaps I'm thinking Tom Holman has the right mindset, or let's do the internal investigation. Let's do the assessment. You know, they do this at the CIA. I believe they still do it, or they do this at the FBI, where they have regular reviews of the agents to make sure that they're not being bribed. They move people around, make sure they're not being bribed, they're being influenced, being forced into criminal activity by someone, to being blackmailed. They do these interviews. Maybe it's time that in our military, as we need to clean up the military and get rid of the DEI appointments, get rid of these men that are dressing women that are leading the military, try to evaluate the mindset of the military, do a better job of that in taking care of our veterans, our present military members and our veterans, and finally commit to having a fighting force that's ready to answer the call when necessary. Tom Holman, his comments, of course, confirming that this Islamic terrorist in New Orleans, he took his truck, killed 14 people, that, you know, it's in the military, came from the army. But as you heard in that cut, saying it's time to make an assessment of what's going on. And I'm reminded of a comment by a friend of mine, a friend of the station's here in South Texas. He's a professor at St. Mary's University, Jeffrey Atticott, Dr. Jeffrey Atticott, who has been studying Islamic terrorism since the beginning, and since 2001. He set up an institute up in Central Texas, up in San Antonio, to study all these. Under the Trump administration, it is important to, again, emphasize who the real enemy of our nation is. It's not white supremacists. It's not white racists. That is the boogeyman that the Biden administration tried to create and distract everybody from. The FBI and federal authorities have been going after the wrong people for several years now. They've been going after Christians, after concerned parents that want to attend school board meetings. They've been going after, Lord knows how many hours and how many millions of dollars have been spent in investigations into the January 6th individuals, grandmas and business people and patriots who simply wanted to pause the process on January 6th 4 years ago because they had legitimate questions, suspicious activity during the election, the COVID election, the election that, you know, I don't trust that it was anywhere foolproof compared to previous elections. It's not 100% foolproof, but man, with all the rules that were relaxed in many states, the Patriots have showed up to Washington and foolishly, even though they were waved in, they walked, they were trespassing, and the FBI and the Justice Department, they went down hard on all these people. They sent them away. I think the first thing that President Trump needs to do when he gets into office is to pardon the overwhelming majority of all individuals who were there on January 6th inside the Capitol, walking around trespassing for whatever reason they were in there. Either they were waved in or somebody opened the door and maybe a cop said, hey, come on in. And they were just walking around, which, by the way, Liz Cheney receiving a medal from Joe Biden, my goodness, that is rich. That's another middle finger to the American people. Liz Cheney, the liar. Liz Cheney, the one who suppressed all this information, all this video, all this testimony from Public Review and created a narrative to try to convince the American people that Donald Trump, he was involved in an insurrection, that the Capitol riot was an insurrection. From the J6 committee. Yes, she receiving a medal from Joe Biden for this, just a middle finger from Joe Biden to the American people. The enemy of this country are the Islamic radicals who attacked us on 2001 and attacked us even before that. Well, 1993, the first World Trade Center attack, the USS Cole embassy attacks, numerous other attacks, 9/11. We didn't learn anything from that, who the enemy is, who the wet dream that they have to kill Americans, to behead Americans, to throw a nuclear bomb at Americans. That's the real enemy. My friend Jeffrey Atticott from St. Mary's University. Again, the incident that took place with ISIS, this ISIS attack in New Orleans, it proves once and for all that the radical Islamic extremist, that is the enemy of America. And under Donald Trump, I hope and pray that Tom Holman and company, they're able to help us refocus on this. All right, let me go to other stuff. One of the reforms that we need up in D.C. desperately under Donald Trump is to clean house at the FBI or give the FBI the marching orders to do its job. There's a write-up in Daily Signal today from a retired special agent for the FBI. You might want to look it up. Richard Stout. Just a little bit of what he shared. As a retired FBI special agent, I work to protect my family, the American people, in a fair and apolitical way. Our family has always embraced the concept of the FBI family, a term that embodies the camaraderie, the shared mission, despite the many years that we cherished being part of the FBI family. I found myself expecting more from HQ in D.C., and was disappointed. Sadly, I'm not the only agent feels this way. The trust the FBI took nearly a century to earn has eroded quickly over the past several years as the Bureau has prioritized intelligence gathering of Americans and wading into politics over keeping the American people safe. Get back to business, protecting the public, fighting crime, upholding the rule of law over at the FBI. When Kash Patel takes over as FBI director, I hope that he fulfills his promise to shut down the J. Edgar Hoover building and the 7,000 agents that are in that building, just disperse them, throw them into the country. Shut down that building, throw them into the country, and do your job. Protect the public, fight crime, uphold the rule of law, and stop going after American citizens. Stop going after political groups that don't agree with the party that is in power in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, especially when it comes to finding sex traffickers and these children that are missing in this country. Probably might need to help Immigration Customs Enforcement find these kids that are missing in this country, about 300,000 under the Biden administration. Okay, let me end this little segment with a little positive note. The oldest living survivor of the attack on Pearl Harbor has died. Warren Upton, his name, died on Christmas Day just a few days back at 105. A spokesperson for the sons and daughters of Pearl Harbor survivors said that Mr. Upton was a very humble and gentle individual. Upton requested to be buried side by side with his late wife instead of being interred with the USS Utah wreckage. He belonged to the USS Utah. Instead of being interred with the USS Utah's wreckage, a tradition of many Pearl Harbor survivors. It's a nice little story as we go pay some bills. It's 19 minutes after the hour. I'm Sergio Sanchez reporting to you from the Dana Show Southern Command in South Texas.
Not able to catch the full Dana Show? Follow Dana's Absurd Truth podcast and get news and laughs delivered in short, easy-to-digest episodes. Ideal for your busy lifestyle on Apple or wherever you get your podcast.
Well, it looks like maybe Mike Johnson might not be surviving the first vote. So we got Chip Chip. Hooray! He voted for somebody else. And as expected, another lawmaker voted for somebody else. That's it. He's lost two. Mike Johnson has lost two lawmakers. So does that put him at 218 or below 218? I don't know, because I kept hearing that if he loses two, that said he doesn't get the majority. Either way, the vote's still going. Mike Johnson and Hakeem, the Nightmare Jeffries, and the way things are going, I don't think Mike is going to survive the vote right now. Let me see here. Breaking news. No, that's not related to that. Let's check some headlines. Go ahead, Steve-O.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I'm Sergio Sanchez from the Dana Show Southern Command in the RGV of Texas. Let's see here. Over a third of workers are considering moving jobs in 2025, that according to a Manpower group following this internationally, asking more than 12,000 workers across 16 countries, and they find that about 33% will be looking for other work elsewhere. JetBlue, back to the U.S., JetBlue is being fined $2 million for chronically delaying flights. The Department of Transportation announcing the move, calling it the first penalty of its kind. The Department of Transportation cited four JetBlue routes that were delayed at least 145 times between June of 22 and November of 2023. Apple is settling a lawsuit related to accusations that Siri, hello Siri, hey Siri. I hope I didn't engage your phone by saying that. That Siri eavesdrops on users. So the tech giant going to pay $95 million to settle the class action lawsuit. Man, I want in on that action. I know Siri's been listening to me. I say something about some product, and there it is. And I get all these advertisements from social media. Siri's been listening to me. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You're listening to The Dana Show, broadcasting from South Texas.
Not able to catch all 3 hours of The Dana Show? Subscribe to the full podcast and get news and laughs delivered in short, easy-to-digest episodes. Ideal for your busy lifestyle on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
I think so. Yeah, the audio a bit muffled on that one. That was somebody asking Mike Johnson, I guess, walking the halls there in Congress. hey, you think you're going to survive the first ballot, first vote? I think so. You heard Mike Johnson. Well, that didn't age very well. No. Steve-O, he's down three votes, right? I think he lost three Republicans, you were telling me, during the break. Yeah, there it is, three. He lost three. So I think it was he could only lose two, and he still had a chance. But either way, he's done. Among them who voted against him was Thomas Massie, Chip Roy. I don't know who the third one is. I have to look into that. Either way, there will need to be another vote for a Speaker of the House. I don't know if that happens like later in the afternoon after recess, or are they going to the weekend and do this. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You're listening to The Dana Show, coming at you from her Southern Command office, home of Star Base, Texas, here, the RGV of Texas, the studios of 710 KURV. Stick around for conversations related to the price at the pump. Inflation, of course, one of the major concerns, one of the reasons many people voted for Donald Trump, hoping to get prices back down. One of the ways we can get prices down is with cheaper energy. Cheaper at the pump, free up a few dollars so that you can buy some more, you know, more expensive stuff. And hopefully the price of diesel can come down. Transporting all the stuff, all the goods to the shelves at the local stores is going to take a while, though. I had a chance to speak with my friend, Tim Snyder. He's a petroleum oil economist, and he watches trends as far as employment and economic trends, especially on the oil patch. So how long is it going to take before we start seeing some cheaper prices at the store? Maybe even at the pump. First, it's got to happen at the pump and then at the store. So that's coming up in just a few minutes. And stick around for a conversation that I had with one of the pros from D.C. that I like calling just to pick his brain on what's taking place up there. Kent Cuccinelli coming up next hour of The Dana Show. Terrorist cells, because of this attack that took place in New Orleans. First thing that popped into my head, my goodness, is this a terrorist cell? Well, it wasn't. It was a member of the military, an ex-member of the military. Radicalized. He probably had some mental health issues. Radicalized and, of course, killed all these innocent people in New Orleans. And, of course, it requires an examination. Like Tom Holman said at the start of this hour, we need to go back and see who has been radicalized in the ranks of the U.S. military. Just a lot of the heavy lifting that needs to take place, a lot of the cleaning that needs to take place by the incoming Trump administration. So Ken Cuccinelli, I asked him about the concern over terrorist cells. And I'm thankful, for one, that despite the fact that millions of people have come into this country illegally, and among them are hardened criminals from other countries, people have been let out of jails and allowed to come here. Some, just maybe it's a small number, but either way, one murderer, one axe murderer, one serial killer, one rapist is one too many crossing the border illegally into this country. And these countries have sent some of the worst. Yes, many people come here because they're economic migrants. I get it. But you cannot close your eyes. You cannot look away to the fact that we've got a lot of criminals that have come in. We know this because they have a terrorist watch list, and they have Border Patrol has been able to catch some of the individuals on the terrorist watch list, like 170, 180 over the past several cycles. Now, you tell me, and those were the dumb ones who got caught. How about the ones that were able to evade Border Patrol? They're in the country somewhere. We know we got criminal gangs from Venezuela, Ten de Aragua, the TDA, terrorizing people in apartment complexes and conducting all sorts of mayhem and criminal activity across the country, the Venezuelan gang. We know they're here. Now, terrorist cells, individuals who represent the same mindset and ideas, twisted, backward, deadly ideas of ISIS, Islamic State. Ain't that funny how under Trump, ISIS was pretty much eradicated, right? The problem with ISIS, Islamic State, taken care of. The president, President Trump, released the hounds and took care of business. And now, under Joe Biden, we got ISIS again. And radicalizing Americans now into conducting these terrorist attacks in our country. We know they're out there somewhere. We've been hearing for forever that they're terrorist cells. Is our government, is the Department of Homeland Security, is the FBI, CIA, everybody needs to talk to each other. These three-letter agencies up in D.C., are they up to the job of finding and protecting the American people from radical Islamists that want to take more trucks and kill people at markets or blow up something? That's coming up next hour. Ken Cuccinelli, formerly from DHS, joining us on the program. President-elect Donald Trump, he continues to show his support for TikTok, the social media app, the Chinese, Communist Chinese Party-owned TikTok. If you want a TikTok account, you have surrendered your address, personal information, purchasing habits, location, you name it, your browsing activity. You have surrendered all that to the Chi-Coms. Congratulations. And you're not alone. We've got over 100 and some odd million people in this country that have done the same. But President Donald Trump expresses his support for TikTok. He's appreciative that because TikTok has reached a younger audience and that younger audience gave him some votes to win, he wants to come to some type of agreement to keep it open in the U.S. The only way that's going to happen, the only way it should happen, in my opinion, is to make sure that that data does not go to the Chi-Coms in any way. No, sir. We cannot be sharing that. There are other social media outfits. There are other online kiosks for people to participate in and express their point of view and monetize as well. TikTok is Communist Party owned and should not be in this country if the Chi-Coms do not release that information and send it back to the U.S., in my opinion, Mr. President. All right. How long can Mr. President lower the price of the pump? Here's my conversation with economist Tim Snyder. I need to ask you about this headline on Ukraine shutting down a Russian natural gas pipeline. I'm sure it's going to affect the European markets that are trying to get some of this natural gas from Russia. The world market as well. Tell me how that big headline from Europe and Ukraine and Russia, the big pipeline being shut down, how does that affect the world market?
Well, first and foremost, it's important to understand that the agreement, the contract that the Ukrainians did not renew is a six-year contract that started way before the war between Russia, that Russia started with Ukraine. And it had been delivering, natural gas. Russia had been delivering natural gas into the Ukraine. And that's a big market share for them because they have significant amounts of natural gas. I think, if anything, they're a little bit light on crude oil, but they've got significant quantities of natural gas. And by non-renewing that contract, it kind of sent a message. And then, the Russian economy is rather shaky right now, is the best way to put it. And it did send a message to Eastern Europe that says, okay, you better find better ways than buying Russian crude oil. They're sanctioned, or crude oil, natural gas, and crude oil, but, they're sanctioned. And, we got a new sheriff in town. The United States of America has a new president, and they're not going to put up with it. So that's got a lot to do with where these markets are right now. And it's all about market share.
Sure. Does that present American producers a new market, new clients? They can pick up the phone. Hey, we noticed that the pipeline's shutting down over there. How about you buy some liquefied natural gas from us? We'll send the ships out to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Matter of fact, I know the plant over in near Corpus Christi is just now, I believe they're underway, and they're shipping. They're going to be shipping LNG to the EU, the European Union. That's important because we have, that opportunity we've had. The United States is still the largest exporter of LNG in the world, and we need to step back and provide the leadership that has been sorely missed for the last 4 years, Sergio.
How long do you think, Tim Snyder, MatadorEconomics.com, energy on the mind right now, how long do you think before we start seeing savings at the pump with the new Trump administration, and then, of course, the domino effect with cheaper diesel, sending stuff to market, to putting it on store shelves, cheaper diesel, cheaper fuel, all that savings. How long before we start seeing some savings, do you think?
A minimum 6 months. It's going to be, remember this, the market momentum, the optimism that we see in the marketplace has already hit the markets. And so we're seeing demand increase. We're seeing optimism. We're seeing, people say, well, maybe I can expand my business now. So we're going to increase our CapEx money. All those things are starting now, and it's going to push that demand a little bit higher. Demand pulls prices higher. The incoming president won't start till the 20th of January. And it's going to take probably 6 months before they actually get any sort of trickle-down effect from the policy changes he's going to make from the standpoint of regulations and those kinds of things. So midsummer, really and truthfully, when we should be seeing the highest prices of the year, we probably are going to start seeing prices go lower, and that is going to be very beneficial. But don't expect to see it, right off the bat. I don't think we're going to see it. Yeah. And with the double polar vortex that's fixing to hit us next week and blow right through you guys as well, is what they're telling me. You know, that's that sort of situation will help pull prices higher. So expect to see prices a little bit higher now, and then we'll start to recoup what we had to give up in the early part of the year just because of the transition to President Trump.
Well, we're expecting under the Trump administration, and there's so many stories I was reading and sharing some news packages this week on how the Trump administration will be a boon for Texas energy, the oil sector and the natural gas sector, for the nation, for that matter. Regulations, we've thrown out the window, you know, these backstops, everything that Joe Biden did to slow the industry should be removed. But there's also a break-even point that producers have to contend with, because what is the break-even right now when it comes to energy prices? Because you got to get into the market and make some money. And right now, the prices seem to be okay.
It is. It is. It is okay. It's actually high. And you know, I went back and did a study, just looking back from presidents, just starting in 2000, starting with President Bush. Every president since that time, Bush, Obama, you know, Trump 1, Biden, now Trump 2, every single one of those administrations, if it was a Republican in office, the average price for a barrel of crude oil was about $54.31 a barrel. The Democrats were about 72, and Joe Biden's about to finish his presidency with almost $80 a barrel in crude oil, which is extremely high. It's what forced the inflation number so high. But I will tell you that I think we're break-even prices are probably low 50s, and we can survive, you know, $54, $55, $60 a barrel, and that's kind of where I'm expecting to see the bottom of that market.
Okay. Well, I ask you because hopefully by removing all these regulations and backstops, you can get a whole people off the fence and put some money out there, right, get some capital out there, and start, you know, the whole drill, baby drill that we've been asking for a while, and hopefully make some money from this. I went home to Houston during the Christmas break for just a few days, and just driving around that behemoth city, my goodness, like 8-10 lanes on the freeway and all these towers. There are so many billions of dollars. Energy capital of the world, Houston, Texas. And it's all traditional energy. It's all the refineries and the plastic producers. And I was telling my wife, oh, babe, it's amazing how much money there is in Metro Houston. And you know what? I told her, this would have been the end of the line for the Keystone XL pipeline. Canada all the way down to Houston for export. But can you imagine how many thousands of jobs and billions of dollars that would have represented for Houston? As if they needed billions more. They already have billions. But there would have been a lot more employment for Texas. Is it too late to save Keystone XL under Trump? Can we make an effort to bring it back?
Well, I'll tell you that the company that owns the Keystone pipeline, and that would have included Keystone XL, said they're not going to restart the XL because too much of it has already been taken down. You know, they cut up the pipes. They got rid of the leases. They got rid of as much of the infrastructures that there was, and you knew that's just what they were going to do. And he said, it costs us too much in contracts and those kinds of things. We're not going to rebuild that. Now, they may reconsider a new pipeline, a separate pipeline that won't be called the Keystone XL pipeline, and it'll have a different path. But, you know, we need to get that Canadian tar sands crude oil down to our refineries, because a mix or a blend of crude oils is what creates the molecules necessary to make plastics that you just mentioned. And you know, all the different products that come as a byproduct of taking a barrel of crude oil and knocking it into molecules.
And it takes time, right? You just mentioned all these contracts and leases.
Yes, sir.
And the materials that go into place and the construction. It takes years to ramp up something like that. To hear that it's dead, it's been sold off. If we started on January 20th, it will still take more than 4 years to get everything up and running from Canada down to Houston. So hopefully they get that second pipeline created to bring everything down here. All right, my friend, Happy New Year. Be safe. Look forward to talk to you again. Tim Snyder, MatadorEconomics.com. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You're listening to The Dana Show from South Texas. Mike Johnson has failed on vote number one. They'll have to vote again to keep Mike Johnson as Speaker of the House, Republican Johnson as Speaker of the House. I don't know when that vote takes place, so we'll see if we can find out here before the end of the Dana Show, coming to you from South Texas.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
I'm Sergio Sanchez from my friend Dana Lash. You've heard it said, you know, don't cry over spilled milk, but yeah, don't stab anyone as well. So there's this guy in Edgewater, 68 years old, who said that he was, I find this funny, self-medicating with beer. I guess what most of y'all do after work, right? He was self-medicating with beer to help his post-traumatic stress disorder. But he stabbed his sister in the face because she asked him to clean up some spilled milk. Okay, he stabbed her in the mouth, in the face, in her body, serious injuries. She wound up at the hospital. The sister told police that her brother is schizophrenic, bipolar, was arguing with her about that spilled milk. The woman said that her brother took one of his two knives at her, and he said he was going to stab her eyes out. My goodness. Sister, I think it's time that you look for a new apartment. Time to move out. All right, so vote number one for Mike Johnson has failed, and we'll see where we go from here. I'm texting some friends right now, see what happens. I'm texting friends up in D.C. So what happens now? They're going to vote again? So we'll find out next hour. And a conversation with Ken Cuccinelli. He was the chief over at DHS under Donald Trump. I want to know if federal law enforcement is up to the task of protecting Americans from sleeper cells. And we know they're here. Ken Cuccinelli has also been working voter integrity issues. I want to know about that 10 million Biden vote bump in 2020. What happened to that? That's coming up next hour of The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez, in for Dana.
So this is really a matter of who can hold out the longest. But considering the fact that Trump went crawling to Chip Roy today in a phone call, I just think that it's funny because, you know, MAGA believes that Trump is this big, mean guy and he's the strong man. But here it is. He has threatened Chip Roy not once, not twice, but he's threatened him a number of times. And Chip Roy always stands up to him. Yeah. And now it's Trump that's calling Chip Roy begging for a vote.
There we go. It's hour three of The Dana Show. How are you, friend? I'm Sergio Sanchez, in for my friend Dana Lash. She should be with us, Lord willing, on Monday after the holiday. Yeah, Jasmine Crockett on the leverage, Chip Roy and Thomas Massie and one more. I forgot the name. Three Republicans voted other than Mike Johnson. And, of course, the other choice on the ballot was the Democrat, Hakeem, the Nightmare Jeffries. So there you go. We're going to vote number two. I've texted some friends up in D.C. that normally do this news thing up there. So what next? Is there going to be a vote before the end of the day, or are we going into the weekend? I've heard it before. I'm sure you have. The first vote sometimes is symbolic. It's meant to send a message. I know Chip Roy, he wants the president to be certified. I know he does. I mean, he's one of the few lawmakers I actually know up in D.C. I have a conversation every now and then with him. I know he wants President Trump to be certified on Monday, January 6th, Monday. That's the first order of business for folks. They need a Speaker of the House in order to do any business. In fact, they need a Speaker of the House. If I heard correctly, it was another interview I was listening to early this morning. They need the Speaker of the House. They need Mike Johnson, that's the only choice right now for the Republicans. Unless you want the drama and the chaos, you know, the Matt Gaetz chaos that was unnecessary many months ago. Even Marjorie Taylor Greene is in line, wanting Republicans to let's take care of business and vote for Donald Trump. Historic win. January 6th, Monday, is the date they got to do that. They can't even swear in new members of Congress. There's new people that have gone up to D.C. They can't do any of that unless the Speaker of the House is seated, and then they can finally do that. And, of course, certify the vote in the U.S. House. So Mike Johnson goes down in the first vote. Maybe it's symbolic. Maybe there will be another vote here before the end of the day. If I get him, hang on, I've got one friend who texted. Yes, I know Chip voted for. Okay, so again, let me text my friend again. That was my buddy Steve. There you go. Thank you, Steve-O. He corrected me. Chip Roy actually voted for Mike and Johnson. I thought he voted somewhere else. Well, we had three that defected, voted somewhere else. Oh, Norman, Self, and Massey. I got you. I see you, Steve. Thanks for the correction. All right. Federal Appeals Court striking down the FCC rule that kept internet service providers from charging more or changing the way they deliver content. An appeals court in Ohio, thankfully, has blocked the Joe Biden administration attempt to try to reinstate Obama-era net neutrality rules, as they call them, during the Obama administration. The move by the leftists was try to control this media, prevent service providers, you know, the big phone companies and cable companies and cell phone service providers that dispense the internet. So let's base it on people paying for premium versus individuals who only pay the minimum and try to get some free service. Well, that's the market. You're willing to pay for it, you should be able to receive it. Oh, no, the lefties can't have any of that. Oh, no, it needs to be free for everybody. We need to have access to the internet. Well, I guess you can go to your local public library, your tax dollars. They normally do that mostly in all communities nationwide, right? Local libraries providing internet service, computer service. They even have computers in their libraries for you to use. So the net neutrality rules from the Obama administration shot down again, hopefully this time forever, and prevented the internet providers from dispensing the information, dispensing the pipeline, the internet pipeline, based on how much you pay for it. The rules, the net neutrality rules, they were removed by Mr. Trump during his 4 years. Biden administration comes in, and in an FCC panel that was now leaning Democrat, voted to reinstate net neutrality. Hasn't really kicked in, though, from what I see. It's still, a premium is still being charged because it's been tied up in the courts, in an appeals court in Ohio. The Sixth Circuit said, nope, we can't do net neutrality. Let the market speak, let the market be, and sell what they need to sell. Here's a sidebar story I failed to mention yesterday dealing with immigration, but I thought important to note because I didn't hear much of this after a top Gulf cartel leader, in fact, one of the fathers of the Mexican drug running, people's smuggling, sex trafficking, Gulf cartel. They'll find the Gulf cartel, the cartels in Mexico, and they will find any nefarious, any criminal enterprise that they can make money off. During the big flood, the tsunami of humanity crossing the border here in this area, the RGV attacks here in McAllen, as they were flooding in, Border Patrol doing their best to manage all the people coming in, they would cross the border with these bracelets, different color bracelets that represented either the location they originated from, the different gangs that brought them up to the border, the amount of money that they paid. I had a dear friend in media who's told me forever, nothing crosses the U.S.-Mexican border, whether it's the Rio Grande River or the Southwest. Nothing crosses the border without the permission, the blessing, the involvement, and, of course, the profiteering by the Mexican cartels. Now, there's different cartels. There's warring cartels. They're all making money from human smuggling, human trafficking, sex trafficking, and, of course, drug running, and gun running, and everything else that they do into this country. But roll the clock back about 15 years or so, and even further back as far as the genesis, the birth of the more violent expressions of the Mexican criminal cartels, the Gulf cartel being number one, and then they had these little group, the Zetas, who provided security for them. And in other parts of Mexico, they had other cartels. So we're looking almost, I think, back to a 25th anniversary now of the birth of the violent expression of the cartels in Mexico. Last, here in the RGV of Texas, I need to emphasize this because you need to understand, and I hope you understand as my neighbors and fellow patriots in our country. Texas, thanks to the efforts of Governor Greg Abbott, thanks to the efforts of Department of Public Safety, local Border Patrol, our local Border Patrol agents that are doing the job, and local police departments. Give you an example. Texas-Mexico border, all the cities we have on the border. If you do the per capita numbers as far as crimes, and attacks and murders. Oh, my goodness. We are way, way safer than the big markets that are the targets of the cartels. And that's where the cartels are sending people to there, even sending up to North Texas, big cities up northeast, Philadelphia, New York, up in Chicago. They're going to the big cities because that's where the big money is. So, you know, if this area of the country was not safe, my wife and I would never have raised the two beautiful boys. And we're still happy we're safe. Never a criminal incident in our neighborhood anywhere near in McAllen, Texas, Brownsville, Texas, the same thing. I tell you what, Elon Musk would not have set up his Starbase, SpaceX, in Brownsville, Texas, if it wasn't safe. He's got 3,000 people as a rocket factory there in Brownsville, Texas. The border is safe because it's smaller communities. It's not the big money of Houston, of Boston, of Miami, other big cities. I need to make sure you understand that. And the reason I'm talking about the cartels right now is because this Biden administration that seems to love criminals, maybe because it's in the family, right? You got Hunter and his criminal enterprise. The entire Biden family seems to be a criminal enterprise. It seems to be, you know, influence peddling, bribe loving Biden family. Many family members be involved in this. 20 some odd million dollars, congressional investigators showing, yeah, the Bidens definitely have profited from all these questionable dealings with business groups in Ukraine, China, you name it. Filtering all that money back to themselves, enriching themselves by selling America. That's criminal behavior, all that corruption. I can't wait to the 20th of this month to get rid of the Bidens. But Joe Biden just seems to love criminals. How many murderers, hardened criminals, did Biden pardon or commute the sentences? Not pardon, but commuted the sentences of people on a federal death row. He only left like three individuals, those two or three individuals that definitely would have cost him an uproar in the media. And the media went along with it. I didn't see any blue ribbon panels, any roundtable discussions, naming of all the individuals on federal death row, naming the crimes. We should have heard that, I believe, from the national media, don't you? I want to review the two dozen individuals that you commuted the sentences for, the people on death row. Biden just commuted all these death row inmates, federal death row. Bye. Just, okay, you guys, we're not going to give you the needle. You know, the father of one of the major cartels just south of the border, the former head of the Gulf cartel, you know, he was deported from a U.S. federal prison, sent back to Mexico. For some of y'all, it's the first time that you hear this. Ociel Cardenas Guillen, the former head of the Gulf cartel, super violent Gulf cartel. I mean, when they began those, south of this border in Reynosa, Mexico, that's a town I grew up at as a boy. In fact, in my old neighborhood, Las Cumbres, that's like a hornet's nest for cartel activity. Just south of this border, my family and I, my wife and I, we stopped going south of the border to go dine and shop and just enjoy some of that nice events down there because of the nasty firefights in Reynosa, Mexico, in Matamoros, Mexico, south of Brownsville. South of the river, that's the troubled area. North of the Rio Grande River, this is the land of 911, the land of the free, the red, white, and blue, where law enforcement is not bought by the cartels. We're safe here in South Texas. South of the border, not so much. 2006, when they had the nasty firefights, we stopped going there. The former head of the Gulf cartel, Ociel Cardenas Guillen, was released by the Biden administration back to Mexico. And if you're not aware of this, there are many examples, several examples, of individuals who are leaders of cartels, leaders of criminal enterprises south of the border, who come up to a judge who has been bought and eventually is through some legal technicality or some contortion that they go through, some legal contortion, those leaders, those lieutenants, those commanders, they wind up back on the street in Mexico, killing people and running their criminal outfit. So, Ociel Cardenas Guillen, he was supposed to stay in jail several more years in a federal prison, in an American federal prison. I think he only served like two-thirds, if I remember correctly, about two-thirds of his sentence. Why was he sent back? There was no need for him to go back. Osiel Cardenas Guillen, the former head of the Gulf Cartel, released to Mexican authorities, Mexican authorities, for further prosecution. I'm counting the days for some type of legal contortion or maybe some raid on a prison, Mexican federal prison, to release the father of the Gulf Cartel, the head of the Gulf Cartel, Osiel Cardenas Guillen, so that he can get back to work, go punch in and participate in the criminal enterprises. And the cartel state, I'm very sad to say, the cartel state that is the country of Mexico. 19 minutes after the hour. This is The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez reporting to you from The Dana Show Southern Command in McAllen, Texas, at the studios of KURV Talk Radio.
Subscribe to The Dana Show podcast, because who says you can't make fun of people while staying informed on your own personal time? Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and from my friend Dana Lash, reporting to you from The Dana Show Southern Command and the RGV of Texas. Dana should be with us early next week after the holiday. Happy New Year to one and all. Thanks for joining us on The Dana Show. So I got a friend up in D.C. working for media there at the House. And yes, so Mike Johnson, the Republican Speaker of the House, he's pressing the flesh. He's negotiating. If he can flip one of the lawmakers and maybe ask the other two to vote present. If the other two vote present and not vote for somebody else, that lowers the threshold. And there you go. He can be Speaker of the House. So waiting for announcement for vote number two. See if all depending on what Mike Johnson can do. All right, Steve, let's do some headlines.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Well, looks like a lot of paper could come of this. 25 to 30 million real Christmas trees were sold across America this past Christmas, and I'm sure you get municipalities and counties all over the country saying, hey, please recycle, please recycle. There's a pastor in South Carolina offering an artificial intelligence version of himself to his members. Pastor Ron Carpenter from a place called Redemption World Outreach in Greenville, launching an app called the Ron Carter Ministries Advanced Archive. Carter says the app allows the user to have his own experience, his own personal pastor with a software, references past conversations with the user. So he can be out of the golf course and the person that needs help, I guess, is addressing the AI version. Only sets you back $49 per month, he says. And of course, Apple TV will be free Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend. From South Texas, you're listening to The Dana Show.
Brighten up your timely news consumption with a Dana Show podcast, where every update comes with a little dash of not so serious on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From South Texas, you're listening to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez in for my friend Dana. So vote number one fails for Mike Johnson. And watching the cables, watching some of the live feed from the House, he's doing a lot of handshaking right now. There was a little group. Mike Johnson did a powwow with a little group of Republicans. And one Democrat who stands out to me, and I recognize a dude, Texas Democrat, one of the so-called moderates, or maybe a little bit right of center on some things, especially border security, Henry Cuellar, all chummy with Mike Johnson, slapping him on his suit, and they were shaking hands, talking with each other, and of course with other Republicans there. And I'm wondering, because I texted Henry, I said, hey, Vote for Mr. Johnson. Come on, let's get this done. Texas Democrat Henry Cuellar. Of course, he's not going to do that. I don't know. I mean, I'd be very surprised, pleasantly surprised, if he does it. He really doesn't have much to lose because here, Western RGV Democrat Henry Cuellar, he's under federal indictment of some corruption charges. I don't know if that plays out bad for him. That might be an empty congressional seat in a mostly conservative area of Texas. And the Democrats, conservatives, west of me in Laredo, they're going to have to make the decision. Do we want to go woke, hyper-left? Because Henry barely survived an election against a hyper-leftist, Marxist, woke candidate, young lawyer from his market. So they might have to make a decision on that. So again, so vote number one failed. I asked a friend up in D.C. who's at the House, I said, hey, So might there be another vote tonight? Or are they still haggling? Well, he told me that Johnson has been speaking to two of the holdouts. He needs to flip one and the other vote present, and then he would be good for that. So let's see what happens. Obviously, the vote's not going to happen before the end of the show, so tune into your local news to see what happens. I'm sure Dana will be talking plenty about this on Monday. And I hope it's done by Monday, because on Monday, January 6th, the U.S. House needs to vote to certify the vote for Donald Trump as president. Bizarre story from overseas. Suicide rates rising among North Korean soldiers that have been deployed to fight for Russia and the ongoing war with Ukraine. Spokesperson at the White House, our White House, saying young North Korean soldiers have turned to taking their own lives over surrendering to Ukrainian troops. One soldier who was captured by Ukraine died from his injuries recently. A spokesperson said that self-inflicted deaths, North Korean soldiers fighting with the Russians who have been captured, self-inflicted deaths are believed to be out of fear of reprisal against the soldier families back in North Korea. You are captured, you're alive, the family's going to get it. My goodness, how sad. And I want to point you to a write-up in the Daily Signal that was looking at pro-lifers in jail. You know, the Biden administration, Joe Biden, since 2021, the Biden administration has used its Justice Department to bring criminal charges, civil cases, using the so-called Freedom of Clinic Access, the FACE Act, to prosecute about 50 pro-life advocates. The Daily Signal, they had a chance to speak to 10 of these individuals who are behind bars. They were able to communicate somehow and share their stories. You might want to look for that article, because you guys remember when Roe v. Wade was shot down, right? Or the rumors that it was going to be shut down, right? Somebody leaked the information way before the decision was announced in that summer of 2022. If y'all remember, there were plenty of attacks on pro-life ministries, pro-life clinics, pro-life resource ministries, a lot of attacks. Any of those people get prosecuted, sent to jail? I don't think so. The Biden Justice Department, oh, they did take that so-called freedom of clinic access, and they went after, prosecuted at least 50 pro-life advocates for simply praying in front of clinics. One individual, one story that I saw, he and his wife were praying and offering to adopt the children of the women going into the abortion mills. And they got the ire of the Biden Justice Department. 10 of these pro-lifers in jail, go look for that write-up. And the Daily Signal, they were talking to these 10 pro-lifers that were in jail during Christmas. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You're listening to The Dana Show. I spoke with a friend earlier this morning, Ken Cuccinelli, about America's capacity to deal with sleeper cells. And also, since he's working voter integrity issues, I kind of want to know, where did this 10 million plus Biden voter bump come from back in 2020? Here's Ken Cuccinelli. I say Happy New Year to an individual I love speaking with from time to time. He was the United States Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security. And of late, he's been working to try to firm up the rules and the laws when it comes to voter integrity, part of the Election Transparency Initiative. Ken Cuccinelli, I'm sure you working at Homeland Security, knowing all these different departments and all the different roles and responses by Homeland Security, I just want to get your quick thoughts on what we all see right now taking place, a terrorist attack in New Orleans, and that bizarre incident that took place in Las Vegas. Well, I want to get your thoughts on where your mind is right now as far as the state of security in our nation.
Well, I think what we're seeing, first of all, is in the New Orleans attack, unfortunately, for his purposes, he was very effective. I think you have a person who is a cross between mentally ill and Islamically radicalized, and he went on this attack. I don't yet, so far, I think that it's just coincidences between him and the other character who really, it's hard to digest the one in Vegas. He, according to his uncle, he was a Trump supporter, so the idea of this Trump-Musk protest doesn't really fit that information. We should be hearing a lot more from the military at some point. Really, not us, but the FBI will hear more from the military about that individual in particular, because they had a lot of history with him. And a lot of them, the psychological reviews they do for the Green Beret types who work internationally will come into play here. So I also should point out to your listeners that the Department of Homeland Security is somewhat misnamed. Okay. So in a situation like this, the Department of Homeland Security has no responsibility. The FBI is solely responsible for dealing with these situations. I will say that for the Sugar Bowl, the football game there in New Orleans at the time of the attack, that is an event that the Department of Homeland Security plays a role in helping to manage and oversee the security of. Typically, Secret Service is in the lead because it is a high probability target. And of course, we saw an attack take place around that. Now, you wouldn't have needed the football game. It was Bourbon Street on New Year's Eve. But that's the Department of Homeland Security role. And it isn't providing security all over the city. It's really connecting all the different agencies and departments at all three levels, federal, state, and local, that have to work together to do the best job they can to be prepared and then to respond.
Ken Cuccinelli, my guest. Ken, you working under the Trump administration briefly, helping to doing traffic control. They're managing DHS under Trump there for a while. Yeah. Now, look, sleeper cells. And under Joe Biden, we've had, Lord knows, millions of people came into the country illegally. Lord knows how many more millions came, were not tracked. They weren't caught by Border Patrol. And there's, and so some individuals were on the terror watch list that they were caught. Well, what about the ones who weren't caught? Okay, sleeper cells. Are you confident that the hardworking people, FBI, CIA, Secret Service, all these agencies, these three-letter agencies, are doing what needs to be done, sharing information with each other to make sure that if we do have sleeper cells in this country, that they are not a threat to us?
No. I mean, frankly, we've already blown that by letting them in with the Biden open borders policy. I mean, look at the Hamas attack a year ago, October. That was prepared for 17 years. They sat and gathered materials and information and money and weapons and dug tunnels for 17 years before they launched that attack.
Yeah.
Some of the dangerous people the Biden administration has let in, yes, they caught some. Those are the dumb ones. It just wasn't hard to be a gotaway in the Biden administration. We're going to be paying for the Biden administration's open borders policy in security, both espionage to foreign countries and terrorism within our own country, for decades. And that's a sad fact. But it's true. We are going to have incidents. Now, neither of the folks involved in the two incidents you and I were talking about came across the border. So to be clear, I'm not connecting the two. But the fact of the matter is, even Chris Wray, who is, you know, in pointing out the dangers the Biden administration imposes on America, has testified under oath just how bad the security problem, the open border, has created for the United States. That is going to be with us for many, many years.
Ken Cuccinelli has experience at DHS directing traffic over there under the Trump administration. And you mentioned espionage, you know, which is really never talked about, which is true. But right. I think we do it to ourselves. We've been doing it to ourselves all these years by bringing in the CHICOMs to universities, medical institutions, research facilities, and industry, because they're all beholden. They're all good communists. You don't get the plum jobs and appointments.
Right.
You don't get those plum jobs and appointments. I keep saying this all the time. You don't get unless you're good with the party. And we know all the intellectual property that's sent over to China. We already bring that upon ourselves.
But. Well, I, you know, speaking of Christopher Wray, I'm not in the habit of quoting him all the time, but I think he testified right next to me. I think it was one of the hearings he and I were both testifying in, where he pointed out that the stolen intellectual property by China represents the largest wealth transfer in the history of the world.
He
put the estimate at that time at about $600 billion worth of stolen intellectual property.
Yeah.
They've stolen their way forward.
And they keep stealing. They're still here.
And to your point, in many respects, we've let them do it. We have so many Chinese students here, and they don't come study Western Civ.
There was an effort to look into this and to reform that, but then all these cultural elitist types, and you know, they got all the, they all got all butthurt saying, "No, you're being racist. You can't sing about the Chinese." Hello.
And what they really, they say that, but what they're really worried about is that they've made themselves so expensive and irrelevant that these Chinese who play, who pay full price, are financially supporting these universities, by the way, who hate us, right?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, we can get a double benefit by cutting those Chinese student visas down to nothing.
Ken Cuccinelli, my guest, these days he's been, for many years now, he's been, for several years now, he's been working this election transparency initiative. I want to ask you, Ken, this is last conversation you and I had. I mentioned the 81.5 million, you know, Biden voters, which was like 10 million plus more than the average Democrat gets every election cycle. Kamala, Obama twice, you name it. Can your organization and friends find the funding to do the time consuming, it's going to be time consuming and expensive, but do the forensics on who were these people that created that bump in 2020? I think we need to find that out before we need to find that out in order to make all elections more secure in the future.
Yeah, so we have this huge bump of millions of people from 2020. If you compare 12, 16, 20, and 24, you know what's funny here, Sergio, is that folks on the left are saying, "Hey, where did those 10 million people go that voted for us last time?" So so they look at 2024 and they say, "What happened?" We look at 2020 and say, "What happened?" I'll use my home state, Virginia. The voter rolls for the election really aren't available until the spring. And I don't know what the timeline is in every state, but it's going to take months before we can even start to make the comparisons between the two election cycles. But there is a great deal of interest in making that comparison. It's really a subject for you and I to take back up, you know, come the end of the summer this year, because then there'll have been enough time for folks to get to work on that.
Well, call back and make sure to speak with Dana about this on the national show as often as you can. And I do hope that comparison and those forensics do take place. We do need answers on that big bump from 2020. That's former DHS chief under Trump. Again, his organization, Election Transparency Initiative. Look for it online. That's Ken Cuccinelli. Well, we got some breaking news. It actually happened before the end of this version of the Dana Show. Yeah, short play, some political theater, brief grandstanding. So Mike Johnson has been elected House Speaker on the first ballot. What happened? Well, the holdouts, they flipped. Had two of them who flipped and voted. Said, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to change my vote. So there you go. Mike Johnson, 218, and you know, Hakeem the Nightmare Jeffries, whatever he got. So there you go. Speaker Johnson wins on the first ballot. And share some audio here before the end of the program. I'm Sergio Sanchez. This is The Dana Show from South Texas.
The Dana Show Podcast, your fast, funny, and informative news companion for those always on the move. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Say it, Norm.
Mr. Self is recorded as Donalds.
Heath Self.
Mr. Self, Johnson.
Okay, so Ralph Norman from South Carolina, Keith Self from Texas, they originally voted no, right? Initially voted against Mike Johnson. And they flipped their votes. So there you go. Mike Johnson, as a friend of mine was trying to explain up in D.C., they haven't called the vote, Serge. They have not called the vote. They ran the first vote. He fell short by two votes. Ralph Norman and Keith Self flipped their votes. There you go. Mike Johnson, 218, And Hakeem, the Nightmare Jeffries, 215. There you go. Kentuckian Thomas Massie remained the sole GOP holdout. So now the Speaker of the House stays, has the gavel. Come Monday, January 6th, they can certify the election in the House for Donald Trump. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and for Dana Lash, have a wonderful weekend.